Hi, welcome to DCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White. Happy to have you with us today and happy to have our crew here in the studio. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning.
Brian.
Morning, Brad.
Bob.
Hello, guys.
And our special guest who used to be a regular but is coming back regularly, Bob Weber.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
So, Bob, it's great to have you with us because we sometimes get genetics questions, and we've got a couple today.
Fantastic.
Genetics aspects. So.
Yeah, great.
We'll get a chance to discuss. We've got one on bull selection for raising replacement females. We've got a question that Bob has actually worked up, and I think all of us have received emails from Bob with four different spreadsheets, a Word document, and he drew a pretty picture on the board, all relative to cow depreciation. So we're going to have a good discussion there, as well as a follow-up from one of the meetings that we were at where safety was discussed and how do we promote. And I'm going to ask you guys for some tips on farm safety. As always, if you have questions for us, you can send them to us at bci@ksu.edu. We like receiving those questions. You can also use that if you want to sign up for our email blast, which goes out weekly. Guys, before we get into our topics today, we were talking with the kids and talking about different talents and things that they might have. And I'm going to ask you guys a little bit about some of your hidden talents. And I've known Bob long enough that I know Bob has one because he told me one day, he said, I am really good at drawing a fire hydrant, which of course, me being me, I did not believe him. He drew a really good fire hydrant.
My
secret
talent.
I want to know what other hidden talents you guys have.
That is a good one. Well, I
took your best one.
You did take my best one. The other one is I can whistle most Western theme songs.
Oh, do one. That is good.
And on Saturday morning, that's a common thing.
Weber?
Yeah, good question. Hidden talent. I don't know, a lot of people know, but I'm a decent mechanic, I think. Like, I'll tear into some fairly significant stuff. And as a kid, I was really, well, we drove Dodges, right? So we got to work on stuff a lot anyway. A pretty good understanding of how the internal combustion engine works and what the components are. And no, I do not own a torque wrench, but I should.
Brian?
I don't know. I don't think I have anything useful. Does it have to be a useful
talent? No.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I'm pretty good at recalling random movie quotes and inserting those into conversations.
Okay. Well, I will be. So we're going to listen the rest of the podcast, and I want to hear at least one random movie
quote. All right, fine. I'll get it.
Dustin?
Yeah, I don't know that I have any hidden talents. I'm pretty good at just acting dumb. So nobody expects much out of me. So that
keeps expectations in check.
Keeps my expectations in check. I can always exceed everybody's expectations because of that.
Excellent. I knew you guys would have some good ones. So, and Bob, we're going to ask you to later draw us a fire.
Yeah, I'll draw you a fire.
And what's yours?
I don't know that I have a great hidden talent either, although I can... I can fall asleep on a plane once they start taxiing and be asleep by the time we get in the air.
So, that's a good skill.
That's a useful skill, actually. Yeah.
So that's my skill. But let's talk cow depreciation. So, Bob, you and I have a student that we've been working with, and there's a class that we're talking through some of the cow management on the health side, on the repro side. And basically, this started with a question of, when should I cull cows? Kind of back to our average herd age we were talking about a few weeks ago. And there's a couple options that have come up. One, cull relatively early and keep new genetics coming into the herd. Or basically every time she has a calf, she stays in the herd if I think she's going to go another year and I have older cows. So maybe give us some background. And I wanted to discuss this when Weber was here so he could get some feedback on the genetic side. But give us kind of your initial thoughts on this.
Well, Dustin can kind of help me and back me up. But basically when you think about depreciation, there's three numbers that we think about. One is the purchase cost or the cost to lay that product in. So for a replacement, a lot of times if we're raising our own replacement, it's all the costs up until the time she has her first calf or we sell her first calf. And so there's, you know, all the feed, her value as a weaned calf, all those things go into that first number. Then the other number that's in the numerator is you subtract, well, what's her salvage value at the end? And those two kind of give her, you know, beginning value minus salvage value. That's what she costs me during the her lifetime or her depreciation. And then you divide that by the number of years or the number of calves or how it's kind of how long we kept that asset. And so honestly, you could focus on all three of those numbers and probably should, in that the lower my development cost is, the better. The more I get from them as a cull animal, the better. And the more years I have them in the herd, the better. Well, then there starts to be trade-offs. And this is where the conversation was with the student. He was saying, or he asked the question, well, if I sell them earlier, they have more salvage value. Maybe a lot more salvage value. If they're kind of still in that middle-aged, running-age cow, I might get a lot more salvage value out of her versus open as a thinner, older cow. Her salvage value is the lowest it's going to be. And I thought that was a great question. And we kind of looked at the spreadsheets. And the answer is it depends a lot on cull cow prices and calf prices and other things too. So I don't know that there is an always right answer. But in general, I'm going to stick with my original theory that basically the more years I can divide that cost out, the better. In that I would keep her longer, even if her salvage value goes down, just to keep her older. But he made a good point that there is a point where if I could turn them earlier, I might benefit in some situations. But in general, I'm going to go. So if we're going to use the pickup truck analogy, it's I'm going to keep them as long as it's still running.
Dustin, anything you want to add?
So, yeah, I agree. First, I just want to say we're talking about depreciation from a management perspective, right? Not tax. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we're talking about management. There are the three components to it. And I think you want to maybe think about each one of those. And so if you want to just pick salvage value, right, there's probably each operation is going to be slightly different on how you can try to increase that salvage value, whether it's maybe if you got a cull cow and you want to cull it, feed it a little bit to try to get it up a different class in a cull cow. Also, we think about, Bob, I'm going to throw this back at you, but is there a, when you think about the value of a cow, right, you know, it probably starts to depreciate probably years what?
Yeah, that's
four or six, seven, eight, and then it probably starts to level off there towards.
I would agree. And again, different situations might be different, but basically, kind of in those middle years, I consider cows similar in value. So it's not like a 6 year old is not a lot different in value than a 5 year old, or maybe not even much different than a 4 year old. But you get past six or seven, and then their value really starts to go down just because you're picturing, well, what's the longevity after this point? And a lot of times weight of their calves start to go down and different things. And so probably the highest value is when they're relatively young, then it kind of plateaus for a while, and then it probably drops off pretty rapidly at some point. And that's probably around 6 or 7 years of age. And again, I'm not going to carve that in stone, but as they get kind of into the old age category, they're worth a lot less. So another way to say that, there's not much difference in the value between a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, but there's probably a lot of difference in the 6-year-old to an 8-year-old. So those are kind of the point that I think you're trying to make is, and that was actually the point of some opinions that basically if you sell them right around that 6 years of age, they're still have that pretty high value as a salvage value. And versus waiting till longer. And so that was the question the student asked. And, you know, it's the concept of, well, I've got these three numbers, the initial cost, the salvage value, and the years. What's the optimum combination of those?
And every operation is probably just going to be a little different because you got to think about each one of those three components on what works best for you.
I think it is safe to say, though, try to do the best you can. So try to keep your heifer development cost reasonable. Try to get some value out of those cull cows. So, you know, there's different cull cow grades, and higher body fat is worth more money, and you get more weight if you can put that on them efficiently. And there's a timeliness to it, a time of year.
The seasonality.
Yeah, the seasonality. And so there's some ways to attack all three.
And management-induced open cows, right, are expensive, right? So figure out if you can have an opportunity, if she's fertile and reproductively sound, but doesn't fit in your calving season, she'll fit in somebody else's. Don't sell a bred or an open cow unless you have to, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a huge value difference between that, and that changes markedly the depreciation cost you realize. So,
well, and we're talking about depreciation kind of in isolation a little bit too, right? And so there's things to think about, like, okay, if I'm replacing a 6-year-old cow with a heifer, am I giving up some reproductive efficiency? If I've got a cow that's bred for 4 years in a row and she's still in her prime, but I'm going to replace her with an unknown, is there a factors I need to consider there too, beyond just depreciation costs, right?
Yeah. And a little bit of forward look, I'm thinking about our current market situation, right? The next 2-3 years, calves are worth a lot, right? And they're going to be. And so if I replace a cow that I could forego maybe a season, so maybe switch spring to fall, does that give me an advantage versus keeping a weaned heifer calf that it's going to be 2 years before I realize the calf? I miss a big chunk of the prime marketing opportunity. So that the seasonality of the cattle cycle may play a role too, besides the valuation bit. So
what about, Bob, what about the genetic component? So Larson mentioned initially one of the thoughts is, okay, I bring in better genetics, so it makes sense for me to get rid of cows earlier, and that genetic component can overcome my depreciation cost. What are your thoughts?
That's a really good question. And I think it depends on what genetics you're focusing on and what your marketing endpoint is. And the question really becomes, can you make up enough value improvement in, let's say, cow adaption, you know, optimal fitting the production environment, or calf value on the back end, say you retain ownership and sell them on the rail. Can I get enough additional premium out of the new genetics versus the existing genetics to make that pay? My gut hunch is that's a pretty hard proposition to make, right? Because the replacement cost and the seasonality of doing it, you know, right now, those heifer calves that would go to market, if you keep more of them, you forego revenue, and because your placement cost now of a weaned heifer calf into the system is exorbitantly high relative to what her cull value is going to be in 8 years when the market's the other direction. So that part of the planning I think is really important and trumps the genetic improvement bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, bird in the hand, two in the bush, right? Well, I think I'm making genetic improvement. What systems do I have in place to actually document that, right? So understanding how I'm going to measure and monitor genetic merit in my cow herd to make sure if that's the strategy that I'm actually achieving that. It's not just I bought these bulls and so I'm counting on it, right? Like you got to have a strategy to make sure you're picking the right heifers.
Absolutely. And I think that's important. As you mentioned, one of the three things that Bob and Dustin both talked about, your purchase price, which if you're saving a replacement heifer, is what I could have sold her for. So it's my opportunity cost.
Absolutely.
And then what it takes to grow her. So that has changed over time. So good feedback. I think great discussion there. And Bob, you put together a fair bit of information on this. So if anybody has further questions on cow depreciation, you can certainly shoot us an email. Happy to follow up on that discussion. The other one we wanted to talk about was, and as you are working cattle, dealing with a ranch or a livestock operation or even a farming operation, safety is something that is important and we should think about. And Brian, I'm going to go to you first and have you talk in general terms. And I want to get you guys to maybe give, what are some things that I should, for me personally, I like to put this on the back burner and not spend a lot of time thinking about it. So help me put it on the front burner or give me some tips I should think about safety wise on my operation.
Well, I mean, there's lots of different areas you can focus on and just kind of depends on what you have in your operation, right? But I guess I'd start with facilities and equipment. I think that's one area where we can get into a lot of trouble. And I know we were talking a little bit before the podcast and several of us have not necessarily experienced the animal direct injury, but the animal moved a piece of metal and caused us to be injured, right? And so I think, you know, making sure, don't ignore when the teeth on a gear are stripped off. You know, make sure everything is clean and well maintained. And at some point, some of those things might need to be replaced. And I know that's hard to do sometimes, but when you think about the consequences of safety, it's not just, you know, you're thinking about rise in insurance premiums, but really, I mean, it's, you know, could be a death of somebody that works on your operation. And that's not what we want to have on our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Making sure that you check that stuff before you use it without a cow or calf in the system, right? Especially yeah, with those
the cow muscles. Shouldn't be the test.
The subject, cow should not be right? the yeah. test yeah. if you go through. Dustin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, growing up, first time we had, I mean, we had a bunch of cows. They're always pretty calm. You could always, there was always this one that would always, this baldy that would always stay away from you, and didn't think much of it. But, you know, first time calf went out there, wanted to see the calf. Well, I learned pretty quick. You know, I learned how fast I was. I mean, I was really fast.
And that's turns out she was really fast too.
She was probably even faster. But that first time, it stuck with me, and I've always been very cautious, you know, thinking about at least with calves. In fact, I don't even get very close at all. If I can, I just stay away. And but it just, it always sticks with me that, hey, that first time. And so.
Well, and I think you're right. And observing the body language, because often, and she was telling you something, and they'll tell us with body language. But and if you're experienced, you know what to look for. If you have somebody on your operations that's not experienced, make sure they know what to look for. And Bob, I'll turn to you. What should we look for to tell me that maybe a cow's going to be trouble?
Yeah, so particularly, you know, if we think about these recently calved cows, they're sort of, you know, big hormonal change. They're in protect my baby mode, right? And so that cow will often try and place herself between the predator, you, and her calf, right? And so just being aware of what her initial response is. And one of the things that often we'll get, and I know even in our own cows, when I go out to approach a calf, that your sort of natural thing is to go directly to the calf. But try and make sure that you get the cow between you and the calf to start with, to sort of put her a little bit at, like, not like, oh my gosh, somebody's gonna get my calf mode, right? So just animal being aware of your position relative to the calf helps a lot, because then you give her the opportunity to give you some feedback about how is she feeling about me approaching her calf, right? And that feedback will be
out of me. The feedback is, yeah, her head is cow lowered and she's charging.
Yeah. So and a lot of times those cows will they'll either vocalize to, they'll start talking to their calf, right? And the calf, you know, the little bleh, and then she's bleh, right? That's a big warning sign, like the foghorn's going off, right? If they put their head down and start pawing, you've applied enough pressure that you should release that pressure and retreat, right? And so if you keep pushing, she's going to come at you. And so, you know, that positioning of cow between calf and you is a sign that she's on alert. And then she will keep escalating that until she feels the threat is insufficient to warrant a response. So,
and sometimes patience is something I did not have very long ago. It wasn't very long ago, but now if you're patient, you wait till the next day. Sometimes you can get those things done. Bob,
You don't want the say when strategy, right? Yeah. Like, because they will come after you. Yeah.
Bob, at the meeting that we were at, we talked a little bit about OSHA, and we may have to come back to that. But I want to talk through some of the things you learned, like things like maybe don't ignore it the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the – we were at an Academy of Veterinary Consultants meeting, and that one of the main take home was a lot of times everyone involved in the organization, you know, owners, employees, whatever, see some, maybe a near miss, or they see something that could be a safety problem. And the speakers really wanted us to say, well, take that seriously and go fix it. And it might be, you know, might need a welder, you might need a cutting torch, you might need to nail something up, but learn from the near misses, or think ahead, even better, think ahead and picture what could be a problem and take action. And that's, I think that's the main thing about safety is, you see a potential problem, take action, and that takes a culture and a habit to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Good safety tips, guys. So the last question I want to hit on was from a listener, and they said, a few weeks ago we talked about a bull that would make good replacement heifers out of heifers, and what are some of the things that we might want to look at of specific characteristics for that bull? And I'm going to broaden it a little bit for you guys and say, if I want to raise replacement females, what type of genetics should I look for in my bull? And Weber, I'm going to go to you first.
Well, I think one of the, in your, the heifers out of heifers things made me really think about this. It's pretty easy to think in, you know, breeding decisions for first calf heifers to really focus on calving ease direct, right? We want to make sure those females have an easy birth, no dystocia, because we know that has an impact not only on, you know, calf survival and performance, but also that cow's rebreeding performance. And so no dystocia is the goal. Unfortunately, there's a negative genetic association between calving ease direct and maternal calving ease, so how that female is going to perform as a first calver. So when you make a mating decision to keep a heifer out of a heifer, you've got to be careful to make sure that the service sire you use has not only probably acceptable levels, it doesn't have to be crazy high levels of calving ease direct, but favorable maternal calving ease EPD. So that's one where, you know, if you keep selecting down the calving ease path, you'll actually breed into harder calving replacement heifers, and you want to make sure to avoid that. The other bit is to really think through, you know, what kind of cows you're trying to make. And for many producers, I think the realization of we've got to get our arms around mature cow size and lactation potential to control maintenance energy costs and production costs is becoming real. And so thinking through, you know, using a selection index that's targeted towards replacement females and your marketing endpoint is really valuable, because it helps balance out that pressure from growth and performance relative to cost.
Absolutely. And I think all those are good points. And some of those, like you talked about calving ease direct and maternal, may mean I'm going to get an AI sire, not a natural sire, so that I can get the exact control traits
I
want.
Yep. And the accuracy with those EPDs. Yep.
Bob?
Yeah, I do think that this is where, and I tip my hat to the breed associations and organizations like BIF, that the indexes are probably, you know, so if the producer wants to know how should I pick a bull, I would use the index. And each breed association has slightly different indexes, but they're pretty darn similar. And every breed is going to have some sort of a maternal breed index for selecting replacement heifers. So I would pick a bull that's relatively high for the breed in that maternal index. And then you can kind of ignore the rest of the chart, the rest of the EPDs.
But you're not ignoring it. They're baked in.
They're baked in.
Yeah.
But I can ignore them because this column, this number is the one that I'm going to use.
Yeah. And I would say, too, one of the things that's really important, and I'm a big fan of the selection index approach, is if you're going to make a restriction in the breeding decision, so I know I need to mate heifers, don't go sort on calving ease direct or maternal calving ease as the first criteria and then the index. Do it the other way around. Go and sort for the best performing animals with the index that you're using, so aligned to are you keeping replacements or not, in this case yes, and the right marketing endpoint, and then go down that ordered list from best to worst until you find a bull that meets your independent culling level for calving ease direct and maternal calving ease. That'll get the optimization of the value proposition right, versus if you put in the independent culling level first, you miss bulls that may be just below it that are much more valuable in terms of all the other traits they bring to the table. So it's, getting that order right is important.
So you're not single trait selecting, even with an index, although you're doing your primary sort based on one thing, because that index has several things in it.
Yeah, it's, and then optimally you figure out weighted what's the next. Economically important traits to that endpoint goal. Yep.
So I think that's good feedback as you think about, and would you, where would you go to get this? Say if I had a specific breed that I wanted, where would I go to get that type of information? How would I sort that out?
Couple of places. One, if you know you're going to use AI bulls, you can go typically direct to the AI studs and look through you know, lists of bulls and rank them on, you know, they have a search capability. The other thing is go to, you know, breed association searchable database and search, you know, put in criteria for, you know, what trait you're interested in, and typically put in some kind of minimum value and an accuracy requirement, and it'll sort bulls based on that, and then you can, you know, use that to then go find the bulls that are AI studs. So
excellent. We appreciate that listener question, and if you have others, you can certainly send them to us. Bob, we've enjoyed having you back again.
Yeah, no, great to be here. Thanks, guys.
Nice to have you on the podcast. And as always, if you have a listener question, you can send it to us at bci@ksu.edu.